We are in the midst of our summer sermon series, and I've been talking about the Christian home. And today I'd like to talk a little bit about child rearing or child discipline. Most of us are here today as parents or grandparents or parents-to-be. Some of the young people here today, probably within the next 5 to 10 years, will have children of their own. Some of the kids, as they grow up, they're still within the home, and they need to recognize and understand child discipline. Those of us who have children, obviously, we need to impose the kind of discipline upon our children that the Bible recommends. And even grandparents have some influence, some, you know, recommendations that they can give to their own children as they discipline their kids as well. So I think almost all of us have something that we can apply from this set of instruction to our lives, practically speaking. So let's consider then several things that the Bible says about the topic of child discipline. First of all, I'd like to look at the goal of parenting. Parents sometimes fail to think in the long term when it comes to their children. They just want their children to behave themselves right now. You know, there's so much going on and we're having so much trouble with our children. We really would just like them to behave now. We really would like our children to not kill each other right now. So we're so focused on the here and now that we may not think about the future, about the long-term goals for our children. But biblically speaking, what are the long-term goals for our children? Well, first of all, obviously, to raise children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, to raise children who would serve and honor God. We all, I think, are familiar with that passage in Ephesians chapter 6 that talks about fathers, bring up your children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And for every Christian parent, he or she, both parents working together, should strive to bring up their children to know and to serve God. We know that passage in Deuteronomy 6 that talks about having the Word of God very prevalent. Talk about these things when you're walking by the way and when you sit down, when you rise up, when you go to bed. All the times of your life, we ought to be learning. We ought to be teaching our children the ways of the Lord. So we want, obviously, the main goal, the highest goal for the Christian family is to see your children saved. You want to present them the gospel. You want the children to accept the gospel and to be saved. You want the children to be part of a local New Testament church. You want the children to live out a godly kind of Christian life, and that, of course, involves being a part of a church. You want your children to be fully devoted disciples of Christ and to live out the Christian worldview. You want them to adopt the biblical form of Christian life, and you want to see your kids grow and to follow Christ with their lives and to live the kind of Christian life that they should. Somebody put it this way, the goal of parenting is not behavioral control. It is not merely to produce well-mannered children. The ultimate goal and proper focus of biblical parenting is redemptive. Parents are responsible to lead their children to Christ. Parents are in the role of evangelists, constantly pointing and urging their children toward Christ. And so the highest goal always has to be to pass on the faith to the next generation. And so we always ought to be, as Deuteronomy tells us, about talking about these things in our home so that the children have every opportunity to accept Christ as their Savior. Now, obviously, we can't guarantee anything. We can't force feed them this so that they accept it for themselves. But we can do a lot of things to put them into the place, have a context, have the atmosphere of your home such that your children hear the gospel and it's most likely that they will receive it. But then also we ought to be seeking to raise children who will successfully fulfill their God-given vocations in life. We want our children to fulfill their responsibilities that God gives them. And typically we think of four different vocations of life for Christians. That would be family, church, citizen, and career. So regarding the family, we want to develop the children, help them grow up so that they can be functional members of the family. Now, as their children, we know that they have certain responsibilities. We've talked about this before. Children basically are bound to, they are responsible to obey, to honor their parents, and to learn. And so as children, as we're teaching our children, we ought to enforce and try to teach them that this is what children are supposed to be doing. As a spouse, when the children get a little bit older and they prepare to marry, we ought to be teaching our children and training them to be godly spouses. Then parents. Obviously, parents ought to be teaching the next generation how to be good parents. And a lot of that is simply shown by example. So being a part of a family unit, teaching your children what it means to be a family member in every part of life, as a child, eventually as a spouse, eventually as a parent. We want to pass down the Christian faith in those regards. And then regarding church, to be a good church member, to be part of a church, to be worshiping with another, with a group of people in a local New Testament church. We want them to be part of a church and to serve the Lord through that. We want them to be a good citizen. What does it mean to be a citizen of the United States? What does it mean to, you know, vote and support candidates and all those kinds of things? And then to be a good employer or maybe an employee, have, you know, a career, teach your children, train them so that they can hold down a job. So these vocations, family, church, citizen, employee, or part of a career, Christian families want to see their children functioning in those ways or prepared to meet those responsibilities throughout their life. Ultimately, Christians want for their children what God wants for their children. I hope that every Christian parent ultimately would say, I want my children to fulfill God's will for them. I don't know necessarily what God's will is specifically, but I do want my children to be pursuing God's will. That's really the highest goal after salvation, to see them saved, but then also pursuing the will of God. I hope that your aspirations for your children are not merely physical. You know, there are many parents today who would say, well, I just want my children to be happy. And by happiness, they mean fulfilling or enjoying the American dream. I want my children to have a nice family, to be, you know, married, to have a nice house, a nice car, a nice education, a nice career, a nice retirement, to be healthy, to be near me so that we can visit. You know, I want my children to enjoy all the blessings that the world has to give, all the earthly things that the world can provide for my children. I want my children to have all that stuff. Well, that's wonderful to achieve the American dream, but what about spiritual aspirations? Christian parents should have spiritual aspirations for their children. Their ultimate hope is that they would love and serve God. We don't want our children, as Jesus said, to gain the whole world and lose their own souls. It's a wonderful thing if your children achieve the American dream, but what if they gain the world and lose their own soul? We have spiritual, or we should have, spiritual aspirations, higher concerns than simply the things of this world. All those other things that the world can provide are secondary, or they should be. Many parents, unfortunately, stress those earthly things to the extent that they don't really have spiritual aspirations for their children. They don't look into the child's salvation or Christian life experience. And so, as Christian parents, we should recognize that our highest goals are spiritual goals. We want to see our children saved and serving the Lord faithfully. We want to prepare them to fulfill their God-given responsibilities and obligations. We want our children to enjoy the blessings of the Christian life. We want to pass down that faith from one generation to the next. And if those are not your goals for your children, well, I hope that they would be. I hope that you can see that these are biblical goals and that we ought to be pursuing them as Christian parents. Let's go on then to some foundational principles of Christian child discipline. One way to ensure that our children fulfill their biblical goals is for the parents to raise their children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And that requires that we impose discipline on our kids. Before we get into some of the nuts and bolts practical suggestions of child discipline, we should consider several broad principles that guide or control how we do child discipline. So, first of all, discipline your children. That's the main thing here, is to impose discipline on your children. Proverbs 23, verse 13 says, withhold not correction from the child. In other words, impose discipline upon the child. Proverbs 13, 24 says, he who spares his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him promptly. And so if you love your child, you impose discipline upon him or her. Parents are obligated to discipline their children. We show love through discipline. If there's no discipline, frankly, there's no love. Now, some parents, I think, are exceedingly tolerant and permissive. They allow their children to get away with virtually anything. And on the other hand, some parents are excessively harsh or sharp, strict on their children. They impose harsh discipline even for minor offenses. Now, obviously, we don't want to be too permissive, but we also don't want to be too harsh. And so there's got to be a midpoint there. There's got to be a balance between harshness and permissiveness. If you're going to lean one way or the other, though, I think it's best to be stern rather than permissive. You can be strict, you can be stern without being abusive, without being overly harsh. Permissiveness, on the other hand, has some really negative connotations and some negative results. So if you're going to lean one way or the other toward permissiveness or toward strictness, I would rather see a family be more strict than permissive. Because children are not, as it says here, you shall beat him with a rod, he will not die. Okay, if you are somewhat strict with your children, not abusive, but somewhat strict, that's going to be okay in the long term. I would far rather be a little bit stern than overly permissive. But whatever your style of parenting is, you must impose discipline on your child. As I mentioned before, over in Ephesians chapter 6, where it talks about the nurture and admonition of the Lord, that seems to indicate both verbal admonition or verbal discipline as well as physical discipline. Sometimes parents are good at yelling at their kids. They're good at the verbal form of rebuke and admonition, but not so much on the physical side. And I think the Bible tells us quite clearly that there are occasions when physical discipline is necessary. For example, Proverbs 22:15, it says, "Foolishness is bound in the heart of the child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him." So that's talking about physical correction, in this case using a rod of some sort, but we all know that there are various forms of physical discipline. Sometimes it is needed to drive that foolishness out of a child. He's bound, it's bound within him, the sinfulness, the foolishness is within that child, and you need to drive it out. And occasionally, that requires physical forms of discipline. Now, of course, we know that parents must never abuse their children. That is sometimes the criticism of those who use physical forms of discipline is that, oh, you're abusing your child. And I'm certainly not advocating or promoting abuse. But there are forms of physical discipline that are appropriate and that will not hurt the child, it will not harm the child, but it does impose a physical consequence for bad behavior. So we're not talking here about abuse at all. In fact, discipline out of love. When we discipline a child, it's really an aspect of love. We read this passage in Proverbs. It says, "My son, do not reject the discipline of the Lord or loathe his reproof. For whom the Lord loves, he reproves or disciplines, he corrects, even as a father the son in whom he delights." So discipline is a form of love. It is to show concern for the child because you don't want that child to go the wrong direction. So following that model, we know that discipline is an expression of love. The Lord chastens those he loves, and so should we. Somebody put it this way, "If the children are doing something wrong and consequently self-destructive, it must be stopped. If the parents refuse to make them stop for whatever reason, they are treating their children with contempt and hatred." That's kind of strong language there, but I think that I would agree with that. If you are allowing your child to do something destructive and evil and not stopping it, well, it's really showing that you don't love your children. Discipline is not done, of course, for the benefit of the parents, but for the benefit of the child. We should not discipline out of an emotional reaction to the child. You know, the child does something wrong or misbehaves, and the parents get all upset and agitated, and they discipline then out of an emotional state of agitation. They are disciplining because they are emotionally upset. And really, we should discipline more calmly and not discipline simply because we are upset. We discipline because the child has broken a rule or done something that is worthy of discipline. It's for the child. It's not to vent our rage or our frustration or our embarrassment. Discipline the child because he's violated a rule and the things need to be changed in his behavior, not because you are angry. Also, don't discipline for childish immaturity, things done in clumsiness or accidents, like a spilled glass of milk, dropping a book, wetting the bed. You don't impose discipline for being childish and immature. Children are naturally childish and immature, so you have to be a little bit discerning to tell whether this was just a mistake, it was just a little bit of immaturity that has occurred, or because they were being rebellious. If a parent tells a child not to throw the ball around the living room, and he does so anyway and breaks a lamp, then the discipline is called for not so much because the child broke the lamp, but because the child disobeyed the command not to throw the ball around the living room. So you've got to recognize that that discipline is for a particular purpose, not because you're angry, not because the child broke something, but because the discipline is necessary to change the child's behavior. Discipline should change the child's behavior. If the behavior is not changed, then the discipline, frankly, has not been effective. If the children keep doing the same things, then the discipline, frankly, is not working. So remember that purpose of the discipline is to drive that foolishness out of the child, to change the child's behavior. And if the behavior is not changing, well, then it's probably true that the discipline is not working. Now, some discipline we know is judgmental. That is, you're putting out a punishment. You're punishing the child because he or she did something worthy of punishment. You're seeking to alter the child's behavior as well as impose a just punishment on the child for what he or she did. Punishment should be the result when the child fails to obey promptly and completely. The children should know that if they disobey what mom or dad commands, there will be prompt, quick, and appropriate punishment for that. When the children fail to obey, they should expect discipline to follow quickly. Parents, I believe, must enforce that standard. You let your children know that if they are not compliant with your commands, there will be swift consequences. It's remarkable to me how often parents tolerate disobedience and bad behavior from their children, as if there's nothing that they can do about it. Children will learn how to behave if their parents impose discipline for disobedience. And then parents should see themselves as partners in discipline. They should both agree regarding the forms of discipline, how it's going to be meted out, what it would be done for, you know, all those things regarding discipline. They should be of the same mind. Oftentimes the children know, you know, dad is a pushover and mom is much more strict. And so if I can get the two to disagree about how things ought to be done, then maybe I can get off with less punishment. Sometimes, you know, father is disciplining the child and the mother comes up and says, oh, now, you know, John, don't be so harsh with the child, or you know, don't impose that kind of discipline on this. He didn't know what he was doing. He's sorry, you know, and the child or the parent imposes or sort of gets between the one imposing the discipline and the child. Well, this is where I think the two parents have to be on the same page and agree that if the child needs to be spanked or the child needs some form of discipline, the two agree on how it's going to be done. And they don't, especially before the child, in front of the child, disagree about that. Because children are very smart and they can recognize pretty early that, you know, mom and dad don't agree on how this discipline is supposed to be done. And so they'll make the most of that. And so you want to agree about those kinds of things ahead of time. So don't contradict one another as parents or partners. Parents should be consistent in their discipline. Impose the same set of standards in every situation. You won't get good results if you're inconsistent or sporadic. The kids should not be led to believe that the discipline is going to vary according to the mood of the mom or the dad. Oh, dad's in a bad mood. Don't get near him. Or mom is really happy. She'll let you get away with anything. So, you know, the mood of the parent should not change the form of discipline. If the child does this behavior, then this is going to be the consequence, whether mom or dad feel good, bad, or indifferent. It's not dependent upon the mood or the time or, you know, whatever other variables, the children should know, I've done this, I've crossed this line, here is going to be the consequence. Discipline should be based on biblical principles, not simply on personal feelings. Now, we all know that every household is set up a little bit differently. Every household had a little bit different, you know, household rules. That's fine. But I think those rules that you impose in your household should be based on biblical principles and not simply, well, you know, random things, but there's a good reason for this rule. Here's the biblical principle backing up this rule. Things like be honest, okay, that's a biblical principle. Don't lie, tell the truth, obey your parents, respect your parents. Don't hurt one another, don't break things of value. You probably don't need a list of 100 things to, you know, rule and govern every single detail of your household. If you have just a few, maybe 10 or so rules, general rules, don't tell a lie, respect your mom and dad, don't break things, don't kill one another, you know, those basic rules that children should understand. And then, you know, you can impose discipline when they break those general rules. Don't provoke your children to wrath by having so many rules that the kids feel like they're walking on eggshells all the time. Discipline should be proportional to the offense. The punishment must fit the crime. One way to provoke a child to wrath or discouragement is unreasonable discipline. Defiance, disrespect, and stubborn rebellion are bigger offenses than failing to make the bed. There's a difference between mischief and mutiny. Make sure the punishment fits the crime, and so don't impose harsh penalties for minor offenses. John MacArthur tells the story of how his toddler son once flushed a watch down the toilet. He asked his son why he did that, and his son responded, "I just wanted to see what it would look like going down." MacArthur said, "Did I punish him severely? No. I'd like to have seen what it looked like going down." He said, "I remember being that age." So there are some things that are mischief, you know, monkey shine type things. And then there are other things that are mutiny, that are rebellious, and we need to, you know, be able to figure that out. We can minimize discipline by showing our children love, grace, and forgiveness. Children often misbehave because they don't feel loved. They don't believe that their parents really care about them. They're just trying to push the boundaries to see if they get a response. Do my parents really care that I go and play in the street? Do they really care that I get a tattoo? Do they really care that I wear my hair long or dress like a goth or something like that? Are my parents going to do anything? Are they going to react? Do they care? Well, sometimes teenagers are not sure if their parents care, and so they do kind of outlandish things just to see if they can get a response from their parents. And so if you have a household that's full of love and grace and warm affection, it, I think, will reduce the amount of discipline that's needed. And then we discipline our children because we're trying to teach them that there are consequences to sinful living. When children disobey or dishonor their parents, they must learn that there will be significant consequences. And this is an example of a larger truth. There are eternal consequences to sin. If a child continues in a pattern of stubborn rebellion and disobedience and disrespect, he cannot have a hope of eternal life, a home in heaven. He cannot hope to have a happy life. In a certain sense, discipline helps the child understand God's wrath against sin. Proverbs 23, verses 13 and 14 says, "Do not withhold correction from the child, for if you beat him with a rod, he will not die. You shall beat him with a rod and deliver his soul from hell." So there is kind of a correspondence there between a child's salvation and the child's discipline. In a certain sense, discipline is redemptive. It shows the child the benefit of obedience and salvation and the disadvantages of sin. Discipline may actually save or help save your child from the eternal punishment of hell. And so that's one reason among many to use child discipline. These are all general principles regarding discipline that we should understand even before we impose discipline. So now let's look at a few more general or a few more practical suggestions as we consider then methods of disciplining our children. Child discipline, as you may imagine, is a huge topic, and there are many, many books written about it. I don't claim to have any original thoughts on it, but here are a few things that I have gleaned from my reading of the Bible and other sources on child discipline. So just a few practical thoughts here. First of all, set a good example. As we all know, more is caught than is taught. Your kids will learn far more from your life than from your lectures, especially if your lectures don't line up with your life. As Paul said, follow me as I do what? Follow Christ. Follow me as I follow Christ. And so the children need to see you living out the Christian life in your home, in your regular day-to-day practical lifestyle. See you follow Christ because you're setting a good example for them. A sincere, consistent example of Christian living is one of the most powerful tools in raising children. If they see that in you, if they see a sincere trust in God and a sincere Christian life lived out before them every day in their home, that will set a lot of good principles for them as well. They will follow in your footsteps. Also, be clear in rules and expectations. You can't discipline a child over a rule that he doesn't know or understand. Children don't have to agree with the rules, but they should know them and they should understand what's going to happen if they do not follow the rules. So make sure that the rules are clear And I would also suggest not having too many of them, just general rules that they can understand. Insist that the children obey and honor their parents. We talked about it, I think, 2 or 3 weeks ago, where Paul says in Ephesians 6, children, obey your parents in all things. Honor your mother and father. So the two main things that children are obligated to do is to obey their parents and to honor them. And the parents have to teach the children to do that. Parents teach children to be obedient and to have respect. One of the major errors I think that parents often make is that they put up with too much disobedience and disrespect. They allow their children just to do whatever they want to. They allow their children to be disrespectful and disobedient without any consequences. It's only when things get really out of control, oftentimes, that parents respond. You know, when the child is really obstinate and when the child is really rebellious, then the parents respond, but not before that. It's only when the parents get really fed up that they respond. Instead, parents should discipline every time the behavior is wrong or bad, every disobedience. Kids will learn quite quickly what is expected, and behavior will change when parents are consistent in their discipline. It often takes only 2 or 3 days of consistent discipline to force the behavior to change. For example, if a child is whining and complaining all the time, well, discipline the child every time that happens. And usually within 2 or 3 days, the behavior will change. Children are not stupid. They recognize that if you have this behavior, this is going to be the consequence every time. And if they want to avoid that consequence, they will change their behavior. But you have to be consistent in your discipline. Also, discipline must cause some discomfort, if not pain. Hebrews 12:11 says, discipline is not joyful, but painful. So in the short term, it certainly is painful for the child. It's at least somewhat uncomfortable, but we trust that the long-term result will be beneficial. We want the discipline to be memorable. We want the children to recognize that if I do this behavior, here's going to be the consequence, and I really don't want that consequence. We want the discipline to be memorable enough to change behavior. And so for that to happen, the guilty party must sense some form or some aspect of pain or discomfort. Obviously, we're not trying to inflict damage on the child. We're not trying to hurt or abuse the child, but we are trying to get the child's attention. A little pain can focus the mind in a remarkable way. Abuse, of course, as I've said, is never appropriate, but we should use the kind of discipline that is memorable for the child. It should be painful enough so that the child does not want to experience that again. Now, some parents, I think, go through the motions and issue the kinds of discipline that really has no teeth, no pain, no discomfort. You know, you tell a teenage child he's done something wrong, go to your room. And what's in his room? Well, he has a TV, he has a computer, he has internet access, he has his video games, he has books, he has magazines, he has a comfortable bed. Go to a place that's very comfortable where you like to spend a lot of time. That's your punishment. Sit in this easy chair and I'll bring you some food. That's your punishment. Well, that's not going to inflict too much discomfort or pain. And so maybe instead of putting the kid in his room with all those things to enjoy, start taking some of those things away, other than perhaps the bed. You know, start taking away his video game, his TV, his internet access, his smartphone. Start making some choices that would have a true discomfort for that individual. Some parents, I think, are way too timid in their discipline. They don't want to abuse the child, and so they don't want to inflict any pain or discomfort whatsoever. Some parents are perhaps worried that the child will rebel, or maybe the child will no longer be friendly. Oh, I'm going to lose my relationship with that individual, the little child, and so I don't want to be too, you know, cause too much pain. But the discipline won't have much effect if it doesn't cause the child some discomfort. Also, avoid threats and nagging. I'm warning you. Wait till your father gets home, and then he'll deal with this. Well, I would say issue the command once, make sure the child heard and understood the command, and then expect prompt obedience. If the obedience does not come, then the discipline should be rather sharp and uncomfortable. And likewise, I would say impose the discipline quickly. Young kids, I think especially, need to directly associate the bad behavior with the painful or uncomfortable response. You can't separate, you know, the offense from the discipline by too much time, because they won't understand that this discipline is occurring because you committed this bad behavior. So even young children can figure out that, you know, when you rap their little knuckles with your hand, they understand that, okay, what they're doing is not appropriate, and mommy or daddy doesn't want them to do that. They figured out that whining and complaining can get them what they want, and they'll figure out just as quickly as whining and complaining will cause them pain. That also implies that discipline should not be drawn out or prolonged. You may want to impose the discipline and get over it as quickly as possible. You want to return your home to a peaceful, harmonious condition and not draw out the tension and the conflict for too long or longer than necessary. You want joy and peace to prevail most of the time in your home, I trust. So if there's going to be some unpleasantness, make it quick, get over with it as soon as you can. As I said, some parents use grounding, especially for their older children. But again, I think that's kind of a mistake. Why would you want to extend the unpleasantness in your home for days or weeks or longer? You're asking for a bad attitude for the length of the grounding. You're asking for an extension of disrupted relationship in your home. So if the kids are too old for spanking and you want to impose some sort of a discipline, I would say start removing privileges. Take away privileges. Take away the phone, take away the internet, take away the television, take away the car keys. Whatever it is that the child values, you can start taking away some of those privileges. Make them pay a fee. Make them do a job. I think you want to deal with the problem, have it done, have it behind you, and get back to regular, good relationships as soon as you can. And once the punishment has been applied, the desire should be that the relationship is restored. That's, you know, that's part of the idea of judgment or punishment. The crime has been done, and now you need to have the time. You need to have the enforcement of the punishment. But once that's done, you want to get past that. And so discipline should restore fellowship between the parent and the child. The parent might want to hug the child to assure him or her of your love and forgiveness. Sometimes those times of discipline can actually be sweet times of warm affection, when you have to discipline the child, but then you assure the child that he or she has been forgiven and that mommy and daddy still love you. We're not going to throw you out of the house, but we just can't have this kind of behavior. And so hugging the child, having a time of warm affection after the discipline can be very helpful. And then parents should impose discipline on their children early. Ideally, as the child gains maturity, the parents should be able to lift restrictions. In other words, you want to be most strict when the child is youngest. You want to get that little plant growing in the right direction as a sapling, as a little plant, rather than thinking that you can change the child's behavior when he's halfway grown. Proverbs 19:18 says, "Chasten your son while there is hope." That seems to imply that there is a time after which your chastening is not going to have much effect. So you want to deal with that little child as a little child, even as a baby and a toddler. You've got to have discernment and wisdom as regarding how to impose discipline at a very young age. But I think it's wise to begin discipline when the child is quite young. It's a mistake to indulge a child when he's young and then expect to impose rules when he's older. Some parents think, well, you know, it's just a little baby, it's just a little toddler. We don't want to be harsh with the child. We're just going to let the child kind of run wild until he's like 13. And then when he's 13, then we're going to impose rules. Well, that's not going to work, because you've already taught your child that there are no rules. The child is free to run wild and do whatever he wants to. And so you need to impose those rules and restrictions when the child is young. When children are young, they, especially when they're toddlers, insist that the child obeys. And so sometimes the parents need to remind the child, you know, I'm the parent, you're the child, I get the right to tell you what to do, and you are obligated to obey me. If the child does not come when called, and especially if the child runs away, the parent should address that little act of rebellion very quickly and intentionally. If you're strict when the child is young, you can be more permissive as he gets older and gains self-control. You're trying to teach the children the right value system. You're trying to teach the children to control themselves and to behave properly. And if you start that process when they're young, as I said, as a young sapling, as a young shoot, you can move, you can direct, you can guide the growth of that individual. But once that child becomes older and older, it's very difficult to turn that branch or to turn that little plant because it's set in its ways. And so I think it's best to start that process when they are young. Deuteronomy 7:9 says, "Therefore know that the Lord is your God. He is God, the faithful God, who keeps covenant and mercy for 1,000 generations with those who love him and keep his commandments." And so Christian parents are raising the next generation to know the Lord, to love him, and to keep his commandments. This is the highest goal. We can't force our children to do that. We can't guarantee that they will, but we can follow the biblical model and raise our children to the best of our ability in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. We can take steps to make it most likely that the children will be saved and will serve the Lord throughout their lifetime. We can do that through proper discipline. Lack of discipline essentially means a lack of love. Withhold not correction from the child. He who loves his child disciplines him promptly. And so if we want a pleasant, happy, joyful home, and if we want our children to turn out right, we'll be careful to discipline our children appropriately. Let's close in prayer.